Welcome to the Draw.Good Podcast, your weekly dose of fantasy footy content.
Hello and welcome to the Draft Doctors, breaking down all things AFL Fantasy and Supercoach Draft every week of the year. I'm your host, Doss, and we're talking Trade Week Part 2. All the fantasy implications from the second week of the trade period for our drafts in 2020. Go check out Part 1 if you missed that. It's where we talk about some blockbuster names of Tim Kelly, Brandon Ellis, and of course, Sam Frost. But speaking of blockbuster names, Stevie Fizz, welcome to the show.
G'day, Dicey, and g'day, listeners. Great to be back. Of course, again, a lot of exciting things. Trade periods, great time for fantasy prognostication. But Doss, when I was writing in the show doc this week, just for the listeners out there, they don't know what goes on in the show doc. I tend to have a little bit of fun with some things, and I was writing in Trade Week Part Two, but I didn't write in Part Two. I wrote in Part Dos. It's the Spanish, and how appropriate that your nickname is synonymous with the number two, because it feels like you're just a lump of shit, really, with some of the analysis.
It's good times. Thanks very much, Stevie. So it just is Trade Week Part DOS. I wouldn't associate with that. I am, I've got nothing to come back to. Cam McLaughlin's here as well to round out the doctors this week. Welcome, Cam.
Yeah, g'day, guys. Let's get into it. Slightly more exciting this week than last week.
And there is much more to get to this week, so we're going to have to go quickly through a number of names at the top before we delve deeper into some other moves. Quickly, lads, just a yes or no answer on whether the following players who also found new clubs during the trade week via free agency or trading will have an impact on our fantasy drafts in 2020. We'll start with Steve. You and Cam go back and forth with just a quick justification if you do answer yes. And I'll start with Steve. Eddie Betts.
No.
Billy Frampton.
Yes, but I'll talk about it a bit later.
Darcy Cameron.
Not unless Brody Grundy dies.
Callum Archie and Brisbane.
Nope.
Aidan Bonner, North Melbourne.
Nah, and this one was weird. It seems like they've recruited a few forgotten high draft picks, and Bonner fits the mold again, but it's hard to see him breaking in this year.
Yeah, not a Jack Steele of a couple of years ago, not that sort of type of big scorer and sort of early impact.
Oh, I find it hard to believe, maybe once Cunnington moves on, but
yeah. All right, Dan Butler?
Nope.
Tommy Cutler?
Yeah, one of the show's favourites, an amazing rig, Tommy Cutler. I just think he's going to get games and he'll miss. Like, he's never going to be best 22. And if he is, maybe it's bad times for, like, McGrath or Devon.
All right, Josh Bruce.
Yes, but it's mainly to Bont, so it should allow Bont more time in the mid, you would think.
Dougal Howard going to St Kilda.
Probably not. Maybe it's good for one of the third, like the third defender at St Kilda, whoever that ends up being, but not even for Supercoach.
Okay, that interests me. I thought maybe he might have hit those Supercoach numbers, especially with some of the hype around him this trade season. Dougal Howard, one of the big names in the trade period, apparently.
Oh, not for mine, but, you know, be proven wrong again.
Not even for Cam Corns. Now we're going to dive deeper into some players who found new homes, and we'll start with Jonathan Patton, who made his way to Hawthorn from GWS, Steve.
Yeah, so it was a pretty interesting move. Big Johnny Patton, there's a lot of talk about him moving down to Hawthorn, another one of those bargain recruits that Hawthorn seemed to land. But it's, for me, it's really hard to get excited about the general. We've seen him be relevant the last couple of seasons he played in Supercoach, not so much in Dream Team, but a lot of those scores, and especially in 2018, he was getting a fair bit of ruck time. Like, he was pinch hitting in the ruck. Jeremy Finlayson was playing in defense. So for me, it's really hard to see that situation occurring at the Hawks, especially when you consider they've got McAvoy and Segler already in the team, assuming they both play, and Patton's coming off an ACL. It's hard to see them wanting to put him in the ruck straight away this year. Fitness might be down, all that sort of thing. So I just see him playing as that key forward. To me, he's not draftable, but he should help keep James Sicily in defence, which is, you know, important if you're a Sicily owner. And it could occupy a defender to free Gunston up. I sort of spoke about Gunston earlier in one of the earlier shows as someone I like to have a bit of a bounce back this year. On the GWS side, I'm pretty excited to take Harry Himmelberg or Jeremy Finlayson in Supercoach, both top 15 in terms of total goals 2019. You'd expect GWS, hopefully they can have a bit of good form, bit of good luck with the injuries this year, and both of those guys can certainly kick a snag and bang out a ton in the SC format.
Yeah, right. I like that. Cam, you don't have any different takes on Johnny Patton.
I'm not looking to draft him either. Maybe a little bit more excited about Mitch Lewis and the Hawks. I think he could be just as good as Gunston next year.
I think it's really hard to get excited about Mitch Lewis just at the minute. Like, maybe he does break out. For me, it's a bit early for him to be consistent. And you're talking about a third mouth to feed. Like, I just look at someone like Gunston who's been really consistent, doesn't need goals to boost his score.
Yeah. And so for me, it's about he didn't cop any attention this year. He was probably going to cop some attention next year from key defenders. But now, you know, with John Patton there, I highly doubt you'd throw anyone on him.
Hmm.
All right, we'll move on to the second player, and that was Sam Jacobs moving from the Crows over to GWS, Cam.
Yeah, so we've mentioned it before on the pod that the athletic ruckman these days is king, and so you're Grundy and you're Gawn, and the guys who can get around the park and run all day are probably going to score quite well. Sam Jacobs is more of that old build, which we've talked about as well, and I just don't think he's going to actually get you decent fantasy numbers in the new game type, and coupled with what was an injury-riddled season where he played, sub 10 games, I think it's... I can sort of start to see that the time of source might be past. That said, he is going over to the Giants and he will probably hold the number one mantle as white line fever Mumford slows down. But I'm just not expecting big numbers from him, probably around 75 to 80s. And to be honest, he may actually go undrafted in 10-man league. I can for sure count 10 better choices in the ruck pool than Sam Jacobs next year. Over at Adelaide, though, Riley O'Brien's season, no competition for spots, had an amazing second year, ending with 95 AFL fantasy and 95.2 Supercoach. And I genuinely think that he can go better next year, even if they split some duties with Billy Frampton. Again, I'll talk about that a little bit later. The problem will be where you feel comfortable actually drafting him, though. Given that it is only his third year in the comp, he'll go into that year as the fifth best on average ruckman in AFL fantasy. And there's massive clouds over the person who was ranked fourth in Rowan Marshall due to the inclusion of Paddy Ryder. So will likely be the fourth ruck taken off the board. So I think that might be a high price to pay for a third year ruckman. But what do you guys think about that?
Yeah, Jacobs is interesting, hey? I just wonder about him going to GWS and whether he's a bit more Supercoach relevant. Like, GWS have been top two in clearances in the league for the last 3 years. Like, they are a clearance machine, so he might get a few more of those hit out to advantages in GWS.
When you were talking about Jacobs, Cam, and you said, you know, there's maybe 10 rucks that you could see ahead of him as well. Doesn't that just present him as value, or are you thinking that people next year might go and think he is sort of above that level and be drafting him a bit earlier? Because, I mean, Jacobs would be an awesome guy to pick up sort of later in your drafts, because it looks like he's going to play a heap with Mumford probably not playing as much next season, you'd expect, but they might sort of do a bit here and there. But, I mean, I'd be pretty keen to draft Jacobs if it was late in draft and you're going that punting the ruck strategy again, like we sort of went with this year.
But I think you're going to see sliding towards the later end, sort of like your 6 to 10 of rucks will be potentially Goldie, Martin, Lysette, Big Boy, Cruiser. You know, like I'd probably draft all of them before Jacobs in AFL Fantasy. Steve, you might have a different view on Supercoach, but...
No, I'm pretty comfortable having him outside my top 10.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're in a 14, 16-man league, maybe someone you look at, I don't know. I'm just looking at upside. And the other thing that concerns me is that GWS are so comfortable playing two rucks in the same team, two immobile rucks.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, goodness. If they do that. Mm. We'll get on to the next name, and that's Blake Akers, one of my actual favourites in the old days and also one of the Statesman's favourites. And he moved as part of the State Knives in the Bradley Hill move over to St Kilda. He went to Fremantle. I'll start with the most important factor. Akers should be a dual position player next year with the midfield forward status. I did check today, and under that AFL player rating system by Champion Data, he is classified as a midfielder forward. So that's where some of the hope comes from. He played 19 games for the Saints 2019, and he was made to play a variety of roles, which included wing, forward, some midfield, and even chopping out in the ruck around the ground. So he actually attended an average of 6.5 ruck contests a game, according to Stats Pro. That surprised me, actually. So he wasn't attending many centre bounces because that was between Marshall and Bruce, but around the ground, he was attending some of those ruck contests. Now, there's two free wings at Fremantle with Langdon and Brad Hill moving out. Langdon we touched on last week, and I'll get to Brad Hill later. And everyone's talking about him taking that vacant position. But for me, the most logical and best use of Akers would be next to Nat Fyfe in the center square as that David Mundy replacement. Mundy did re-sign, of course, for his 30th season in 2020, but Mundy and Akers are fairly similar in height as that big-bodied mid. So Akers is 191 centimetres and Mundy's 193. So the major fact here, I think, that does help Akers is that midfield competition as well in terms of score build. We don't know what sort of a coach Justin Longmuir is and what he's going to want from his midfield group. But if you look at the Saints midfield mix that he's leaving, and these were the Saints in the centre bounce attendances in round 22 who are ahead of Akers.
Dossie, just to destroy you, he's leaving the Pies, mate.
Akers.
Oh, sorry, I thought you meant Justin Longmuir.
I don't know
what type of coach he is.
Justin Longmuir is going to slot into the midfield mix at the Saints next year, Stevie.
Look, I'm drinking this $5 brain varnish I got from Liquor Stacks. You're going to need to speak slower and more clearly.
Okay. So Akers, these are the guys that were ahead of him in the centre bounce attendances when he left the Saints. These were the round 22 players. Jack Steele, Luke Dunstan, Seb Ross, Dan Hannabury, rest in peace, and Jack Sinclair. There is arguably less competition at Fremantle, I would say. So looking at the top attendees in the same round, that was Fyfe, Mundy. Again, we'll say he was 35. He's going to be 35 next year. Andrew Brayshaw, Michael Walters, and Connor Blakely. So unless it's Reece Conker season again, and God, I bloody hope not, I think Akers can slot into that mix. The way I look at it, though, for Akers in terms of role, it's going to be either that wing forward role that he played last year, but he's still got that scoring upside. So it's the in form of the time on ground. He had never been over 80% time on ground in his career, and last year he only had 72% time on ground for his averages of around 68 and 70 Supercoach. So it wouldn't shock me, Steve, if he's an F3 at worst in AFL Fantasy next year, with the upside of being an F2 with the opportunity of role and time on ground upside. What do you guys think on Blake Akers? I've always been a big fan, so I may be a little biased in thinking that he can take that next step up.
Yeah, F3 with an F2 upside is maybe a little bit rich for me. I can see how you've got to that point, but for me, it's maybe closer to an F4, and I'd probably hope to snake him as an F5 in draft, only because, you know, until we see it in preseason how they actually roll that Fremantle mid out, we don't really know how he's going to be played. And it seemed frivolous to me, the trade. It was just sort of, oh, yeah, just throw in Akers. Like, it was a proper State Knives move, and it makes me think that maybe they don't value him as much as maybe St Kilda did.
I thought Freo sort of requested Akers because he is from WA. I don't think he was super stoked. That's what I mean. I think Freo wanted him. They saw something in him.
I think it was, yeah. What I meant the frivolity was from that Freo side. Like, they just basically said, oh, well, give us Akers. And they said yes. And it's like, well, okay.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's an interesting one. You certainly bang on, Doss, about the lack of competition internally. We don't know what the new coaching regime will do. The thing with Akers is it's been inconsistent the whole way through. Yes, he can do everything, but yes, he goes missing for massive periods of time as well. We're probably all fans because we've all seen flashes. The good thing is you don't have to pay a high draft price, probably, with him. Yes, he does have all the upside in the world. It'll probably be a frustrating ride, but I'm certainly happy to take a shot on him. And, you know, what's the worst that could happen? I think his upside is F2, but I think his best season will be as an like a low end F2, high end F3. But it's going to be some banger. Like, he might give you three really good weeks in a row, then it'll be three shitty weeks in a row.
I also think that, you know, coming into the team is someone that Justin Longmuir actually requested and chased in James H from Collingwood. And I'd suggest that they'd probably be looking to fill a similar role between the two.
We'll talk about him later, but Akers for me. And the reason, by the way, with the F2 and F3, that is assuming we lose a crap load of our good forwards as well. So, I mean, some of the numbers last year, I think 87 was the lowest average for an F2, and that's purely in fantasy, and 81 was the minimum for an F3. I think it might be lower than that as well. So, I mean, you're probably not even needing as big a score this coming season. That might be an early take, but we might not need as much from our forwards to be actually pretty good this year.
I'm really expecting Fremantle will be pretty bad this year, so it might be hard if he's playing on a wing.
Yeah. All right, Steve, take us through Hugh Greenwood and his move from the Crows to our Gold Coast Suns.
Yeah, and this is one I'm really, really scratching my head off. I don't love the move, but I'm probably still going to rank him pretty highly because I'd expect he'll be listed as a forward for fantasy next year. And that's going to be the thing that saves his bacon, because if he was a pure mid, I probably wouldn't be interested. Now, and I'm really going to break down some stats here. The speculation is that he'll play pure midfield at Gold Coast Suns. There's big questions is, will he actually get that role? Because the things he does well are really what Gold Coast actually do well already. They're a good clearance team and they're a good tackling team. Like, if you look at the numbers, they're actually the top six in, I think, both of those stats. The things that he does better than them is pressure and contested ball. So if it's contested ball away from the clearance, maybe that means he won't play in the midfield, like as a pure center square midfielder. I'm not sure. And it was really interesting to me. People were tweeting out that his 64% contested possession rate during trade week was a good thing. This is fucking horrible. This is one of the worst things that you could have on your resume. Like, if you can't get the ball on the outside, you can't score well. Like, there's no two ways about it. Like, even like if you want to average over 100, like, and the pure contested players like Josh Kennedy, who can do it in Dream Team and all that, they're still getting 12 plus. Like, that's where you got to be. And here's a crazy stat. Of the 212 players who were listed as having played a game as a midfielder this year, and this includes like Callan Ward, who got injured in the first like 5 minutes, he was 212. He was ranked 194th for uncontested possessions a game. He's only done it a handful of times in his career. He didn't even average six a game. So wow. I'm just like, how does this guy average well? Yes, he'll be good for Supercoach. He averaged the 85. He's been pretty consistent across his three seasons in averaging 85, averaged the 78 Dream Team this year. Yes, if he gets a center square role, he could be good. But Gold Coast are good at these things already, so I'm just not sure how high I want to rank him. If there'll be people who think he's going to play center square midfield who rank him as a top 10 forward. That'll happen. But if you can't get the ball on the outside, I'm so worried. Like, I think he's only had over 22 possessions in a game like four times. Like, it's just for someone who gets spoken about really highly, I'm really, really worried. And then you consider that, and if you want to build those uncontested possessions, maybe it's a tank issue. I'm personally worried because he's, you know, he'll be 28 this year. Maybe it's just he doesn't have that footy now. So, you know, like he's not played all this basketball and all that sort of stuff. So Gold Coast, bottom three in the AFL in marks and uncontested possession. He's coming from a team that were in the top four for both. He's going to the team with the worst disposal efficiency coming from Adelaide who are, you know, mid-table. Like, to me, it doesn't stack up that he's magically going to get really, really good in these areas. Like, he'll probably be fine, but it's just, to me, it's really worrying. On how does it affect teammates? For the Suns, it really could be bad news for a couple of Suns, probably Darcy McPherson, probably Took Miller. And if you're a Will Brody keeper owner, I think it's time to cut bait.
No.
Unfortunately.
Really?
Well, you think about it. Like, not only that, like, they're going to bring in Matt Roll. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the talent's going to stack up. And eventually, like, if I was Essendon or Fremantle or someone, I would have been after Will Brody. Unless there's something going on behind the scenes we don't know about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, unless we've seen David Swallow play a variety of roles too. Does he just maybe slide out eventually onto a halfback or something? Or is that not in the near future?
I find it hard to believe, especially when you look at the way they've brought in Brandon Ellis, and he doesn't have to play halfback. They've brought in Lockie Weller. They've still got, I mean, I know it'll be Harbrow's last season, but they've still got Jack Bowes. Like, these guys, like, that's where they're going to succeed, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, who's the guy, and this might be putting you on the spot, Stevie, you were saying that they're one of the better contested and tackling teams. Who are those guys in the midfield for the Suns that would be
better
the real competitors?
Teams.
Sorry, okay. Who would those be those guys that he could sort of be the replacement if they were to prioritize Greenwood over that player?
Well, I don't think they'd do it to Swallow, but probably Miles.
Oh, yeah, surely.
Probably Took.
Yeah.
Well, no, the interesting thing about the Suns is I think it's really hard to pin down a role because we saw charting the CBA's DOS. They were the happiest team to rotate players in, out, give them different roles and all that sort of thing. So even if it starts out one way, it may well change during the course of the season because I still think they're trying to figure out what their best 22 looks like, especially when you consider they're going to have so much talent coming into the team with the draft picks this year, with Brandon Ellis, with Bowes returning from injury and all these sort of things.
It's going to be vastly, vastly different. And, you know, one funny thing that you have been saying about, unfortunately, Fiorini moving potentially more on the outside and not getting that inside time as well is I remember one game I saw him actually play a halfback role. It was only one time, but who knows? Maybe there's still some relevance for my boy. But, I mean, the thing about the Suns is they are going to be so different next year. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens.
I think, like, part of the reason why he has such little uncontested football, by the way, is because he does tag a little bit. Like, they have used him in the past as a bit of a tagger. Really keeps him on the inside. But at the Suns, like, that could actually be what they're thinking of using him as. Because you wouldn't argue that he'd be a better ball user than someone like Took or Swallow. His ball use is pretty paltry. So
it's right down there. It's rated as poor, and it's still better than Fiorini's.
but you know, like, if they're not looking for him to be that sort of ball user, they'll free up Took into that position and throw him in there as a big body to play as a stopper. And that's bad news for fantasy scores, I think.
I don't know, man. Like, the guys he's surrounded by in the uncontested range are like Braden Sire, and, you know, these guys who have, like, no time on ground, do nothing but attend clearance. Like, it's just, I don't know. He should score well. Like, realistically, he should be good.
All right, we'll move on, I think. lot on Hugh Greenwood. He's actually got one of the best, one of these stats pro. I know you've been looking a bit at these player guys. He's got one of the weirdest sort of like builds because he's just elite at all these unique things and just not good at the things you'd want him to be good at as well.
Well, I think for the Suns, he's great at like pressure, you know, all those hard things he's really good at, but they're already kind of good at a lot of them.
Steve, would you say that he's got a large range of outcomes?
Actually, no, I wouldn't say it's large because I think because of the tackling and the contested ball, he's actually going to have a pretty good floor most of the time. So I don't think if you draft him, I don't think he's ever going to kill you. So yeah. I think he's got maybe a tighter range of outcomes than maybe you're alluding to, Cam. Yeah. He's smiling.
Cam, take us through Jack Stephen arriving at your Cats from the Saints.
Yeah, Jack Stephen, a.k.a. Baby Legs, has a couple of potential outcomes at the Cats. He said to the media that he's always played forward and he's always seen himself as a forward, which, you know, to the rest of us watching has actually been him playing a bit of a high half forward role, normally moving to the wing as part of a transition and attending some centre bounces as well. If he plays that similar role at the Cats, I think he could average still about 90, and he should be listed as a mid forward going into next year if there was enough data to actually assess that on, given that he only played a handful of games this year. If that's the case, I'd expect someone like Atkins to miss a role in the team. He was great this year, but I just can't see how, given that Jenkins is also coming in that forward line, how he can fit in there. And also, you know, one of the people that was potentially going to be over to Frio, Sam Menegola. They're pretty similar roles, and Menegola is slower, less efficient. I think Jack Stephen could definitely impact his role. On the upside, though, if he does play that role, look for Joel Selwood to be removed from the wing and go back into the guts where he put out massive scores through the final series. So it could be Joel Selwood's swan song in the midfield, which could be good for fantasy scores. Otherwise, if he plays more of a straight wing role, which, you know, he really should, the Cats need those baby legs at work, he'll average about the same, but the impact will be more on Cam Guthrie and Mitch Duncan, as they are sort of the outside runners for the Cats. At the Saints, probably no impact. He barely played this year, and they basically bought a whole new team anyway, so who knows.
Do you think it's good having someone like Jack Stephen on a wing? Because if the Cats are playing around the wing, that would seem to suit him for scoring.
I would,
because he can win a hard ball.
I would absolutely think that he will score well, but I think 90s is about right for him, given where he's at in his career and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, I'd love to be proven wrong, him be an absolute gun. I'm frustrated by this trade as a Cats fan, because I think it's going to hamper some of the development of the young guys. But that said, it's Jack Stephen for chips.
When we look at Jack Stephen's career, and he was winning best and fairest like he was eating breakfast at the Saints, there was no one in that team.
Yeah.
Like, it was piss. And he's moving into this stacked Geelong team, so I'm a bit worried about where he's up. I don't think he can average 90 in Dream Team.
You don't think so? I think he absolutely could.
He could, but I don't think it's you know, I think that's at the upper end of the range of outcomes. And then you consider how much footy he's missed and the state of the mind, you know. Maybe that's better.
Yeah, I'm 100% not sure. He's come out saying that he's sort of a bit clearer now that he's around family, but, you know, you just never know. It could come back at any time. And, you know, as you're saying, Steve, it's easy to forget that he's only really had one blockbuster season from a fantasy perspective, where he went sort of 110 or something similar. You know, maybe
he was the top scorer overall as well that year.
Yeah.
I looked back, I was like, whoa.
Yeah, he had a monster year, and he kind of hasn't done. He's sat around the 90s since, and that's sort of where I'm going for with this, if the role is similar or on the wing. If it's something completely different, they decide that, you know, actually he's going to be, you know, just sitting in the forward line, that could be 60s. That could be, you know, similar to a Luke Dalhouse role, which wouldn't surprise me.
I think he's going to have some time up forward, but significant mid and wing. It's going to be interesting to see where Stephen goes this year.
Talk about a wide range of outcomes, Cam.
All right, I'll get on to Zach Jones, and he moved over from Sydney to St Kilda, another banger recruit for the Saints. Now, Jones had a solid season in 2019 at Sydney, playing 17 games, close to the 83 AFL fantasy and 86 Supercoach points. One thing that's going to be crucial here, and for me basically caring at all about Zach Jones in 2020, is that positional status as a defender that he had this year. Played primarily as a wing with a bit of defense in 2019. Now he's is named as that small slash medium defender on that same AFL player ratings list I talked about with Akers. So this is the same place that's got people frothing over Lachie Whitfield as a forward because it's got him listed as a forward on there. So I'm not sure where we're at and whether that's accurate or not, but he is a defender on there. Quickly, before I get to the numbers and his opportunity at the Saints, what position do you, Stephen Cam, think Zach Jones will be in 2020?
Yeah, I think he could get the D&Ms.
Like, I'm looking at his heat map now for the season, right, which, you know, it's dots everywhere, but it probably tells me he's going to be closer to maybe midfield only.
Right. Yeah, but that's the possession heat map, Cam. We know that's a bad guide.
Oh, yeah. But I still haven't found a way to find a good guide for positions yet.
Well, there isn't. There really isn't.
Yeah. So,
Freako, can you tell us, mate?
Get on the Twitters. I can see him being a mid defender or just a mid.
All right, send that tweet through, Cam, while I get into the numbers. Look, I've never been a Zach Jones truther, but he did have a good year at Sydney in 2019. And depending on his role, I do think there's certainly some upside. He averaged the 22 disposals, 4 marks, 4 tackles last season. So nothing to get super pumped about. And mind you, that was his career best output as well so far. His upside here would be moving on the inside and getting more tackles, perhaps moving forward as well and kicking some snags. And, you know, he's entering his prime, coming into age 25 season, I believe. He's about 24 at the moment. I may be way off here, but I'm just not pumped for this move for Jones. He had all the opportunity to go big in Sydney this year with their meh season, and he did have a career year, but it wasn't a year that made me think he's going into a new stratosphere of scoring when he gets to the Saints. I think it's concerning for Gresham the most on the Saints side if Jones does go mostly on the inside, because Gresham had those little pinch hits in there. And if he is more of that wing mid mix, maybe pushing Billings forward again, which could be a good thing if he ends up losing that forward status. Does Jones delay Hunter Clark's monster breakout though, Steve?
Yeah, look, I hate the move, and he won't be in my top 50 defenders, even if he has defender status. I couldn't be less excited about Zach Jones. For all the reasons you mentioned, Doss, there was absolutely no one in Sydney, and he still couldn't get it done. Not pumped at all. Yeah, think it could hurt Hunter Clark. With the way St Kilda recruited, I think it's really hard to, you know, be super excited about anyone outside of maybe Seb Ross, to be honest.
Okay. I've been going back and forth. I'm still high on the Hunter Clark breakout next year. But yeah, like it could just maybe cap the ceiling as to what we thought it might have got to just by a few points perhaps. But I think he'll still get center rotations even if Zach Jones is there. I do. I think he will. He got them last year.
Oh, no, sorry. I thought you meant Zach Jones. No, I think Zach Jones is cooked. Like,
where do you think he'll play next year for them? Just wing?
Yeah, well, wing defense.
It sounded more like they were bringing him in to play sort of as that inside guy that's bursting out of stoppages.
Really?
To me, yeah. That's what it sounded like.
It's coach speak, man. Coach speak. Christ, Melbourne had Adam Tomlinson going in the center square.
Well, and for Sydney, quickly, the change is simple there. It's Ryan Clark's season, and I may not even be joking this time.
Well, I think it means Jordan Dawson might be locked up in defence, and that's probably good news for him, and probably, you know, I don't want to say it's Dossie might have got something right with the bad times for old, what's his chops?
Jake Lloyd.
Could be bad times.
All right, Steve, take us through Alex Keith. He moved over from Adelaide over to the Doggies. And Jono's favourite player, his boy, and he's coming to his club. He must be absolutely wrapped.
Yeah, Jono is a massive Alex Keith fan. And look, I actually love the move. It's probably one of my favourite moves of the whole trade period because I can really only see winners. Think he's obviously a super coach pick as an intercepting defender. Averaged the 76 super coach last year in the 18 games. And it's really something the Bulldogs don't have. Like, they really don't have superstar intercepting defenders. You know, what's his face? Dale Morris finally retired. And Cordy is more of a stopper. He doesn't actually average at least one intercept mark per game. So I really love the move there. I think it's good news for Keith. He should be able to do his thing and get some ball there. The Dogs were actually pretty low on the intercepts tally, as you could imagine. And look, the move should keep Aaron Norton forward, which I don't know if that's a good thing for him. He's certainly a talented player and he'll have his big games, but given the increasing internal competition with Josh Bruce, might not be great for his scoring. I think it could be great for Shacky's scoring if he's able to lead out of that 50 and maybe, you know, grab 7 marks a game. I think that, you know, he'd be a very relevant player. And on the other side of the ball for the Crows, it really just means that Dude can resume the role he performed so well in 2018. Obviously, he got injured in the first game in 2019. So, certainly think two players, you know, Keith keeps his relevancy and Dude becomes relevant again. I really like the move for a super coach fantasy perspective.
Yeah, Adelaide's done well finding these intercept guys. First Lever, then it was Dude, and then Keith kind of filled the Dude role when he went down with the ACL, and they've all been elite intercept defenders, and now Keith finds a new club and pretty relevant for the super coach. Where do you think his sort of range of outcomes, what sort of scoring output, Steve, do you think that we could see from Keith next year if he does go full ham, as you know, you can hope for?
You know, probably low to mid 80s is probably his best outcome. You know, right. I find it hard to believe that he becomes a league leader. You know, again, it's a player who's come into the game late, playing other sports, basketball background here for Keith, I think. I don't talk about cricket on this show.
Fair enough. Hey, Cam, take us through Louis Taylor going from the Brisbane Lions to the Sydney Swans.
Yeah, he's... Steve, you're a semi-Louis Taylor fan, aren't you? You've got, you know...
No, Statesman loves him. I think he's shit.
I think he's shit too. So I think he's either going to play as a forward and he'll get you maybe 75 average, or he'll play on a wing and he'll get you maybe 75 average. So he's probably not really relevant in any format. And I think it's really interesting, the move from the Swans, because I think the logic was that Papley would go to Carlton and this was the replacement, but then Papley stayed and now they have both. So I'm actually not sure that Louis Taylor is actually going to be a definite starter next year, and I think he might be more of a depth player. That said, Papley did have some stints in the middle of the ground last year, and he actually did pretty well when he was running through there. So maybe the inclusion of Louis Taylor up forward gives him a better chance to, you know, free up some time in there. I have no idea. But generally, to probably playing in the kneeful.
Yeah, I'll probably take a punt on Louis Taylor. I reckon he'll probably just slot in on a wing pretty easily, to be honest.
Yeah, I was trying to have a look at like who he'd replace though. Like who do you reckon he kicks out?
Well, Zach Jones left.
Yeah, but I think that again,
Ryan Clark played on a wing. He can go back. You know what I mean? Like, I think when I say he's not bad. Like he's fine. You know what I mean? He's a player who'll be on a list.
Yeah,
and I think he's fine. And I think it's something Sydney could probably use. So I'd probably take a punt on him pretty late in the draft.
Okay. Well, what would you expect for an average, like 75?
If he could give me 80, I'd be pretty happy about it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Ryan Clark was playing more of that defensive role late in the season. And, I mean, that could point towards sides. I sort of disagree that he was going to be the Papley replacement, personally. I think someone like a Ronk or something would be able to just like, he's sort of that more of that sort of like for like replacement that they've got on their list already. I think he's still on the list maybe, but you know, sort of that small nuggety sort of goal sneak, whereas Louis Taylor is more that sort of
he's an outside player and Papley's a contested player.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll suck it in a little bit by the media narrative around it, but I just, that was maybe what I thought they brought him in for. So you think there was actually a reason
the media think a 64% contested possession rate's a good thing.
Anyway, Brad Hill.
Yeah.
On to Brad Hill, and he moved from Fremantle to St Kilda as well. And I think it's going to be much the same for Brad Hill in 2020. He only had one below par year at Fremantle since going over from Hawthorn, and that was injury affected in 2018, where he only played the 10 games. He's always going to be more of that 85 to 90 guy with the low 90s ceiling due to his lack of contested possessions. In 2019, he averaged 5 contested possessions and 19 uncontested possessions a game. Very damaging player, but much of the same for fantasy in 2020. Probably a bit of a hit, if anything, with the team being a little bit better and sort of getting it forward. What is awesome from a fantasy perspective is the opening up of the wings at Fremantle with Ed Langdon also leaving, and we did touch on it last week as well. But it leaves the opportunity for Adam Chera perhaps to jump into that role, and I think he's probably the only obvious candidate. Then there's the other names that you'd include, probably Blakely, Akers, maybe even your Jesse Hogan, Steve, if he can manage to go out there. Or our new boy, Bailey Banfield, Steve.
Could happen. Strange things have happened. Range of outcomes, Doss. Range of outcomes.
What do you think of Bradley Hill? I saw your face sort of smooshing up there a bit, Steve. You think he's in for a hit or a boost next year?
No, I think he's in for a hit.
Yeah. And, you talking big hit or just what I was sort of saying, just sort of similar, a little bit lower?
No, I think he's unrosterable.
Wow.
So, yeah, if you look at his numbers at Hawthorn, they're really, you can't play him if he's a pure midfielder.
Yeah.
And he didn't, you know, and he played forward in that team as well. So I'm not trying to poo-poo him too much, but I think he'll be, you know, look at the team he's just left. Fremantle. They're terrible. Like, who's a good outside ball user in that team? It was him.
Hmm.
And no one else. Are you going into a St Kilda midfield where you've just had a wing average 100? You know, you've got Dan, you got this. The thing I hate about St Kilda is, like, I wouldn't call any, like, in terms of fantasy, none of them are really A-plus guys. None of them are A guys. They're really just a team of B fantasy scorers, isn't it? I don't think when you have so many B guys that someone's going to immediately poke their head out and be superstar. Like, you know, the lack of contested ball really hurts him. So much competition for touches. I'm not into Brad Hill at all for next year.
Yeah, when you say it like that, it does make a whole heap of sense. I just thought, I mean, if you do have a wing averaging 100, clearly it's an avenue for them that they want to be using to score. And if you've got Brad Hill, he's almost an upgrade over most people for the disposal. So, well, are you going to go get it to him?
He is, but fine. Then it kills, who does it kill? Billings?
I'd say a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Steve, take us through 3 backup rucks that made their way to new clubs. We've got Pitney to Carlton, Phillips to Essendon, and Zach Clark back to the Gold Coast Suns.
Zach,
oh, you know who I meant.
We do know. Zach Smith, Dossie, doesn't even know his own team's players. Well done. You're on the Kangas for 20, whatever next year is. Now, of those 3 rucks, it's really hard to get super excited about any of them. You would have to say if any of the main rucks on these teams got injured, or perhaps Essendon just went with Phillips. Because Phillips scored well last year when Cruiser was out. I used him in my home league. He was fine. I'd suspect if any of them were solo rucking, they'd probably score okay. But it's going to take an injury for them to be relevant. And no, you don't have to handcuff these guys in your keeper leagues unless you're in a dynasty. You're sucking up 2 roster spots on a sub top 10 rock.
Phillips is the only one out of those guys that I'd be, you know, any interest in, like, stashing if you've got real deep benches for that backup ruck, because he's the only one with, like Zach Smith. He's not, like, he will not play with Jared Witts in the team.
It would have been interesting if Danaher had a left, what Essendon would have done.
Oh, man. Oh, I don't even want to think about it. I've on a bit.
Could you imagine a Phillips Belcho team? I'd
stream.
Oh,
my
both.
God.
hey, don't poo-poo Belcho, mate. He was in my fantasy grand final winning team 1 year.
Yeah, just like, who was that guy from Richmond? Premiership Ruckman.
Sean Greig.
Brilliant.
All right, Cam, can you take us through Josh Jenkins going from the Crows to Geelong? Now, living in Adelaide, I can tell you he's not a popular figure in Adelaide. I'm wondering how you can swing it to make him sound like an amazing player over there in Geelong, Cam.
People hate him in Adelaide.
It's weird.
Like, he cops so bad, much. Man. So his wife was saying that, because he was playing the twos a little bit this year, and his wife was saying that they were hurling so much abuse at Josh Jenkins that the family had to leave.
Oh, it is beyond a joke. Like, every Adelaide fan I know is just the biggest Jenkins hater. So, I mean, from a football perspective, I would like to see him go well. But Cam, from a fantasy perspective, what have you got from us at Geelong?
So, all through 2019, the trend was that tall timber and good teams were starting to be really the only ones of relevance. And I kind of expect that the Cats again to be around the mark next year, and that makes Jenkins a decent F4, F5 with his scoring potential. He's done a few sort of like 70, high 70s to low 80s averages over seasons, and he has a penchant to punch out, a 100 to 110 score every now and then, which is pretty good. So I think that you could probably look at him as being an F4, F5, maybe in both formats. And realistically, he probably impacts Tom Hawkins a little bit. I think they're going to play three talls forward with Ruddigalea pinch hitting in the ruck, which will be an interesting makeup. I haven't seen that at Geelong for some time, to be honest, but F4, F5 for both him and Hawkins would probably be about right. On the Adelaide side, I was having to think about this, and geez, their forward line next year is just as it's thin. So they're going to have basically Tex being the only big guy roaming that 50. Like, think about it, at times this year, there's a reason why Hugh Greenwood got his forward status. They had to play Hugh Greenwood as a forward, right?
Fogarty this time.
Yeah, but Fogarty's not tall. Like, he's
what about
still
Himmelberg?
Himmelberg, is he needs to step up if they're going to have a if they're going to be any chance, I think. But I'd prefer to play Billy Frampton. So, Doss, you were actually saying that Billy was used in the twos as a forward. Is that correct?
Yeah, because in the twos at Port Adelaide, they had Peter Laddams playing a majority of the season in the twos. And I watched a bit of the grand final, and yeah, he was playing as a forward. Did okay. Yeah.
So I actually think they brought Billy Frampton in. The logic is that he's the backup ruckman to Riley O'Brien. I think in reality, he'll need to play a pretty big role in that forward line throughout the year as backup to Tex, who we've seen just he probably can't carry that forward line by himself as a tall. Otherwise, Tom Lynch may spend more time forward than he plays that link role and therefore take a bit of a dip as well, but realistically, Jenkins potentially okay. Their Adelaide forward line scared batshit. I wouldn't go near it.
Hey, Cam, just quickly. Taylor Walker, 193 centimetres. Darcy Fogarty, 193 centimetres. Sorry, mate.
Well, and maybe that's why Tex can't carry that forward line. He's missing 2 or 3 centimetres.
When he does
an inch makes a difference, mate. An inch makes a difference.
When he does that power stance, does he dip below 6 feet?
I think he would. We'd need to double check in the height chart.
That joke didn't hit its mark. That's fine.
No, I was very worried about where we were going with that.
All right, I'm going to go on and continue the next player, and it's James Aish heading from Collingwood to Fremantle. By the way, thanks, Steve, for giving me plenty of variety in my analysis. Frio, Saints, and Frio. Aish.
wait, hang on. Hey. I'm taking issue with this. Didn't I give you your sort of guys? You love Blake Akers. It was Zach Jones. And I gave Brad Hill's probably the highest profile trade. So I've given you the highest profile trade and one of your boys and James Aish.
Thank you so much, Steve. Anyway, Aish is a guy I will be watching closely in the preseason throughout the JLT. So when a coach brings a guy over, you know, generally he's going to rate him a lot higher than the place he's at. To me, that says Justin Longmuir believes Aish has got a bit more to give than he's shown so far at AFL level. So far in his career, he's never really been fantasy relevant at all, apart from a stream maybe when he gets hot over a couple of games, and those long-suffering keeper coaches, of course, waiting for the breakout, have probably been holding him. That's the only relevance he's had. But he started off 2019 really well with a hot 3-game run before having a bad game, then getting knocked out and missing a month. Aside from that, the solid scoring games are few and far between. He's still only 23, turning 24 in November. So still a bit of time to take that next jump. So at the Dockers, he does fill a need that they've got in the back line, and that's just to slot into probably just a back pocket where he's generally been playing, but it could be one of those wings that we've said is vacant. And that's where he potentially becomes a little bit more relevant, because he's just never had a solid score build, just not being able to win too many possessions. I think the highest number of disposals a game he's had is around the 18. So when he does slot over the 20, he can tackle occasionally. He can't really mark. He's not known for his marks around the ground. So if he does slot onto a wing and grab a couple more marks, be kind of keen. But I think he'll just play in the back line personally. But Cam, you thought maybe he'd be slotting into that wing.
Yeah, I kind of see him as, and again, it was maybe the media narrative that did it to me, but a lot of it was about how he was valued heavily as a winger by Justin Longmuir. So okay. That sort of talk has me thinking he'll be there. But, you know, the fantasy coach in me wants him to go to that back pocket because it is another reason why you can't put Connor Blakely there. You know, yeah. So it's sort of, is that a potential outcome? Absolutely. I think Frio is massive question mark. All the new coach clubs, massive question mark going into next year.
What are your thoughts on James Aish, Steve? For me, obviously, I'm not super high, but I'd probably take him as a punt as that maybe the lottery pick final selection.
Yeah, I think the problem is he doesn't have any upside. Like, his upside's deep. No. Sorry, when I say he has no upside, it's not like he's going to come out of nowhere and be a D1. He's going to be a D4. Yeah. For your AFL fantasy. So he's a purely outside player. So he has to build his score through marks. I'm not convinced that's going to happen at Fremantle. I think they're, like I said, I think they're probably going to be in the bottom five, let's say. And if he's playing a wing, he's probably playing as the defensive wing. So that, to me, means he's not going forward and kicking goals, which there probably won't be any goals at Fremantle to kick anyway. His saving grace, he will be listed as a defender. What that means, I'm not entirely sure. If he was playing across halfback as the main ball user out of defence, maybe I'm interested, but I find that hard to believe. Dustin Longmuir was the defensive coach at Collingwood, so maybe he slots into defence and tries to help out the organisational skills side of things. Maybe that pushes Connor Blakely into the midfield and we can get a boost there, but I think it's pretty hard to see him become fantasy relevant at this stage of his career.
Yeah, I think what you said about Longmuir being the defensive coach, I don't think a defensive coach is going to be like, oh, wow, let's unleash this guy. This guy's got a lot of potential to be not a defensive player. I think he's identified his defensive strength and he's going to get him there. And like you said, even if he does have a fantasy-friendly wing role, he might not be fantasy-friendly because he might be doing that lockdown sort of more defensive work rate.
Mate, doing the team things, it's not fantasy friendly, but it's important from an actual football perspective. It's like Andy McGrath does the team things, not fantasy relevant statesman. Sorry, couldn't resist.
I'm almost jumping onto my yearly believing in Andy McGrath cycle again in the off season at the moment.
Wait till January, then it's like full go. When you see the defensive list come out, you go, yeah, Andy McGrath. Top 20. Yeah. Let's go.
I'm all aboard. Well, thanks for listening throughout the off-season, everyone. Shows drop on Wednesdays. You can follow us at The Draft Doctors on Twitter and Instagram or find us on Facebook. If you do want to leave us a review or a rating, you can do that on iTunes. We're aiming for 250 at the moment. Bob L. recently left us a review with the title Kickflips that reads, great to have Steve back. I've dropped out of the marathon with a knee injury too. Awesome podcast. Keen to see Statesman on a skateboard.
That sucks, man. That sucks. It was. I hope it wasn't as bad for you, but good news to the people following the marathon quest. I will be joining the gym this week, as that is what my exercise physiologist has recommended. So I've got 4 months of goddamn deadlifting in front of me, which I hate the gym. Hate the gym. Not a big gym. Used to be a gym fan. Not a gym fan anymore. It's some for the young people who are, you know, trying to hook up. Dossie? not you, you old bastard. Actually, how's the moving in with the missus going? I want people to know this because we've got a lot of young fans out there and they've got their missus and all things. And Dossie's moved in with his partner, what, it was about 6 months ago or thereabouts?
Oh, something like that, I think, yeah.
Yeah, where so how's that working out? Well, I just want to, you know, my life's over at this point. I just want to see how yours is going and give the listeners some perspective as what, you know, what they can expect if they decide, hey, you know, things are going well with Brianne or Tosh Layla or whatever the hell the kids are called these days. Fucking strange names. What happened to Meg or Megan or something like that? There hasn't been, Doss. What, no, you know, if the youngins are out there considering, you know, things are going well.
No, it's going fantastic. Really good. Within earshot. So, fantastic times going at the moment. But no, it has been great. It has been a good experience.
What are the downsides?
No downsides. It's fantastic. Blink
twice.
The downsides is I have to lift my game.
Blink twice if you're in trouble, all right?
Look, it's been an adjustment. Dossie's had to lift his game in the cleaning and the keeping tidy department. But aside from that, smooth sailing, very good stuff. Looking forward to a staunch Steve, though, hitting the gym, getting those pipes, Scotty Thompson style, nice and staunch for the pre-season.
The pipes were okay back in the day. I worked out with Nathan. You remember Nathan Thompson?
No.
Who played for North Melbourne and Hawthorn?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I worked out with him a few times. He had a holiday house up near my parents in the New South Wales when he lived up there. Good, nice dude.
Wow.
Not a great story. No, it didn't.
Yeah, I was going to say that. It's a cool story, bro.
That's all right. Well, you can get nice and fit for your preseason with the Ararat Eagles. We'll see everyone next week.
Thanks for listening to the Draft Doctors Podcast. For more tips and in-depth analysis, head over to thedraftdoctors.com.au.
I fucking hate the gym.